Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Prep Life Podcast. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Anger, and today with my fabulous co-host.
Hey, guys. This is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro.
So today we listened to your feedback, and we are going to be talking about relationships with food. So we had several DMs and messages saying that that's something that you would like to hear. So we wanted to provide that. But first, I wanted to give you a really big update on the MPC News Online. And you can find this on mpcnewsonline.com. It is the special qualifications to compete at national level contests for the 2021 season. So due to COVID, I think this is, and I'm not a mind reader, but I would gather that this was set into place because there just weren't as many regional competitions, which, if you don't know much about the sport, if you're new to it, a national qualifier or a regional competition, you have to, in the past, get first or second place in the open class to be qualified for any national competition in the United States. And with the COVID kind of shortening the season, and then also just, I think just due to, there just weren't as many shows to get people qualified, they've changed the rules. And it used to be this way. Back in the day, in 2017, when Chris was competing for the first time, she got fifth and was qualified then the next year when she won her pro card. To compete in like MPC Universe and North Americans. So they're kind of going back to that. They have officially are allowing all top five placements at a regional competition or national qualifier. That makes you eligible for all of the national competitions. And then also if you place fifth or top five in any of the national competitions in 2020 as well, that can qualify you for this year's. So you don't have to re-qualify at a regional competition. In other words, you can just go from that national show that you competed in if you got top five in 2020 and then recompete in that in 2021. So did I answer, or did I kind of explain that okay?
Yeah, that's perfect. No, I think that's great. Knowing what your next step is after a regional show is super important. So I'm glad you shared the update.
Awesome. Okay. So we're going to get into our intuitive eating book. The premise of today's show is not to portray that we are doctors. If you haven't heard from our past episodes, we are not doctors. And we just want to make sure that everybody knows that we are also not licensed therapists or registered dietitians. It is not within our scope of practice to treat any type of disordered eating. We are not trying to give the impression that this is to, you know, help treat that. You need to go to a licensed professional to, get those deeper issues addressed. But these are just great practices. I think I want to go ahead and just take the word intuitive eating out. And I feel okay doing this because I heard Evelyn Triboli in an interview. She's the co-author of the book. She kind of said, you know, you can like interchange it with mindful eating, which I think we all need to practice mindful eating. I just want to give like a little bit of an example that she shared in this interview. And she was talking about how if you kind of look at the French and their health and their like, you know, obesity rates, their cardiovascular rate, disease and all that, they are a fairly healthy country. And the reason being, if you think about where culinary arts come from, French cuisine is very, they use real butter, they make croissants, they use sugar, and they make pastries and things like that. But they also make their food an experience. They take great pride in cooking, very like, like the senses are heightened when you eat the food. So they have great texture, great presentation, and they really enjoy the meal and make it an event. Whereas if you think about like the standard American diet, fast food, driving through, picking it up, eating it quick, eating it out of a bag, not like using a fork or a plate. So I just want to kind of like preface this whole talk with that. Do you have anything before we start about like the 10 principles of intuitive eating or mindful eating, Chris?
I just think that that's a very interesting representation, like cultural difference. And I think like relating it to prep, I know that for me, like sometimes like knowing I had to eat 6 times a day and was interrupted within my work schedule 6 times a day, it made the experience of eating more of like a to-do task of like, okay, this is part of my prep. I need to like sit down and eat, but I need to eat really fast because I have other goals and tasks ahead of me for the day. So I think, yeah, taking a step back and learning a little bit from a different culture as far as like how to approach food could be a really cool experiment. So yeah, I definitely think mindful eating is a better term.
Yeah. And the first principle is just rejecting that diet mentality. So I think with prep lifers, you know, I kind of make that mistake every once in a while because it's used quite a bit as like the terminology in the industry, like, oh, I'm dieting right now. When really, like, I'm just following a nutrition plan, you know, that aligns with my goals. I mean, that'd be a long-winded way of saying that. But I feel like you need kind of like that framework in the fact that your food is fueling what your body needs in that part of the journey. So, yeah, I'm going to try my best to kind of get away from that term, just like, oh, I'm dieting right now. And I think that will help because a lot of us think of a diet and it's something that's temporary, right? And if we're really living the prep life, you know, that would mean that what we're doing is not sustainable and it's temporary. And I think if we're thinking about things in the long term with the sport, then you have to just kind of throw that out and kind of throw out some of the like, the rules that we have around food and things like that so that we're not getting too wrapped up in, like, for example, if you say that you cannot have any of a certain thing, it just really gets that bad boy mentality where it just looks so much better. And then when the chains are off, you just go ham on it. So it's better to just like incorporate things that you enjoy within the parameters that you're given and making sure that you're not limiting yourself for a short amount of time to just go ahead and then jump into like a major rebound. When I think of like dieters, I think of like Weight Watchers. And I have a family member that she actually would use this term, the Last Supper. I remember when she was just getting ready to start Weight Watchers, we would go to this one pizza place and she'd be like, okay, this is my last supper. And it seems like, okay, well, if that's something that you enjoy, you know, this just seems like it would be something temporary then for the diet. And then once you are done with that diet, like you're going to go back to those foods that you really enjoy. So why not just keep them in, just keep them in moderation. Any thoughts on the rejecting the diet mentality?
Yeah, I really like how you portrayed that to competitors of thinking like you're following a nutrition plan for a specific goal in mind. Because food, I think, is so much more than just changing your body. As far as like your body composition, I think that's where most people focus the energy. It's like, okay, what I eat is going to impact how I look. But also like there's so much more to nutrition and your digestion as far as like affecting all your other body systems and how you feel and how you operate, your mental capacity. So yes, I think not looking at it as like a short term, like I'm going to totally like revamp everything, but more or less looking at it as, you know, like stages, I think, or seasons, and always looking at food as more than just like a tool for recomposition, but to add value to your life, I think is a good way to look at it too.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So number two, is honor your hunger, and we are going to deep dive in this one a little bit. Do you want to kind of go into, some of the things like that we should pay attention to, that we should, I mean, basically you're going to want to eat when you're physically hungry, not when the clock says so, or you're tired, you're bored, you're upset, you're happy, you're alone or you're with people, or it's just some sort of habit. I think you kind of touched on that when you talked about like how you had to have six meals, which really, I think over time you've noticed like while living the prep life, it's not necessarily a requirement to have six meals. You don't have to eat every 2 to 3 hours, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I actually, this is where like knowing my body and knowing my blood sugars and also where your workout fits into your daily practice, I think is something that I really like when people are able to macro count, because they're, you know, there are people who are, they know how to put a healthy meal together and how to plan it out throughout the day. But if you have, like I have some clients who work out really early in the morning, so they're going to need more food volume earlier in the day. And I have people who work out later and they need to shift their food volume or appetite is higher in the morning versus at night. And so I think that part of being mindful of how your body needs and utilizes energy and shifting your amount of meals, whether it's 4, 5, 6, some people do really good with 3, and where your volume of food needs to go, that is something that is, it takes a lot of practice. But I started off eating 6 meals a day because that's what I knew to be like perfectly true. And I found
science,
that,
right?
Yeah, that's what you do. And 2 to 3 days and or 2 to 3 hours, and I would like clock it out. But I've shifted to more 5, and there are some days where it's 4, and I just need like higher volume of food because it balances my blood sugars to not have to like get it interrupted so much. But I also notice there's a difference in improvement season and a dieting. Well, I know we're not saying dieting anymore, but when I'm when I'm working towards
for a show.
Yeah. Then like, I have to be intuitive in that aspect of knowing how to shift my number of meals in that way too. So I may eat 6 because that's more conducive to managing my hunger when my calories are a little bit lower. Whereas in improvement season, I do better with like bigger meals and sitting down less frequently. So.
Yes. Okay. So number 3, the third principle is making peace with food. And, there's a couple bullet points here that I want to really point out. So I'm going to kind of break this one down, kind of drill into this one. So the first one is that it takes 20 minutes for your body to recognize that you're hungry. So if you are in that fast food, if you're like me back in the day, or you're eating from a plastic bag, like on the run, and you're trying to scarf something down because you're going to the next thing, your body is not going to signal to itself that it even got full. It takes 20 minutes to register that. So, if you think about your empty belly as the size of a fist and you kind of visualize that and put your fist on the plate, then you can understand like what it's going to actually take to make your stomach full. It doesn't take a whole lot. So, just kind of learning like the difference between feeling full and feeling stuffed, feeling satisfied, and some ways to get around, you know, or I guess some ways to like make it more an experience. So we're talking about the French, like you want to savor what you're eating. And I know that you have a couple of tricks, Chris, that you can share with the listeners. I had never tried it. I eat with a baby spoon and I do put the fork down in between bites. But what is the other thing that you've tried?
So I eat with my, I'm a right-handed person, but I eat with my left hand. And this actually sprung out of me trying to slow down because I would just like be a machine and just like shovel food in my face with my right hand. And I remember thinking, okay, I know Amy and I have talked about like me slowing down. What's something that like I cannot, like it will just completely inhibit me from getting food into my face super quick. And eating with my left hand was one of those things. It just made it more difficult for me and actually slowed me down. And now it's just a normal thing that I do is eat with my left hand. I've been at dinner with people and they're like, oh, you're a lefty. But only when I eat, I'm a lefty. Everything else, I'm a right-handed. So, yeah, that's a fun one to try. Or I've done chopsticks too. I've eaten with chopsticks before too to slow down. So the baby spoons, baby forks, all those work too.
Yeah, hers is the size of a China doll. I can't find one that small, but I have like a teaspoon that I eat out of.
Yeah.
So another thing is staying hydrated. So taking sips of water in between bites. A lot of times hunger can be masked by dehydration. So just making sure that you're fully hydrated. And then this food scarcity mentality is one of the eating behavior types. And I've noticed this with some of my clients, and I used to be like this, and that's actually why I avoid cruise vacations. My in-laws are so like, they just keep asking me to go on a cruise. And I'm like, my fat kid that lives inside of me just cannot go. Because when it comes to free food, I just like have no parameters. When there's not limitations, it's just like, I don't know. I have this sense of like, oh, I got to get like my money's worth or something. I don't know.
Yes.
So I don't do all-inclusive vacations for the same reason. I just, there's something about it. But another thing to realize is like, you need to understand that it's okay to have leftovers and eat them the next day. Like you don't have to finish all of your food. And I'm really hyper aware of this when I'm around my kids. Because my husband was kind of like raised to be in the clean plate club and like,
yeah,
really like, I mean, he almost gets offended when our kids don't finish like the food that he gave them. And I'm like, it's okay. Like if she's not hungry right now and that's all she wants, like kids are a lot better at regulating their hunger signals than adults. So to me, like, I'm like, okay, we can save it and we can just eat it tomorrow. Not a big deal. So I really try to watch that, especially around my kids. I don't know if you, had you ever had any of those kind of like eating quirks while you were growing up or anything to share, like a story like that?
Yeah, I definitely was part of the eat everything on your plate. And I think it's like, it's been generational, you know, because of like how everybody's like my parents grew up very different than I did as far as like food availability and income. So yeah, I was raised that you eat everything. So that is like ingrained in me and it's part of the reason why I have to be very careful about what foods I buy in bulk. So if I buy a Costco brand, or Costco bag of chocolate, or I buy a half gallon of ice cream, like my natural instinct is like, okay, we need to finish this as quickly as possible. One, because I feel like, that's just been ingrained in me. It's like you eat until like you are full and you're really full. And then also, you don't want to waste food. So you have to eat it quickly so it doesn't go bad. So there is like some food behaviors that I definitely think are taught to us that we don't even realize that we take part in. And also there's the dieting mentality of like, I need to eat all of this now so that it's out of the house and I won't eat any more of it. Where it's actually more of a challenge. And I've had some competitors do this where if they get like a sweet treat after like a home baked, treat after a show, you know, they have family or friends that cook for them. It's almost like a goal to see like how long they can keep it in the freezer because that's almost directly related to taking it in small quantities and enjoying it. So yeah, I think it's good to like just kind of take inventory of how you feel and your behaviors around food in that way.
Yeah. And I mean, I know I've told this story like a million times, but I think we can all relate to our peanut butter woes when it comes to
peanut butters.
I mean, if a jar is out, like, I'm just going to eat out of it. Let's be honest. Like, I have a really hard time, like, not licking my spoon and all that. So I try to portion it out, weigh it all at once, like, when I'm not hungry, when I'm not in, like, a red zone at night. And I just try to get it in the freezer in little individual things. And so not only does it being frozen, it slows it down, but and it makes me not eat it so fast so I can actually enjoy it and register that I've digested it. But yeah, it just gives like portion control. So some things, and we might get into this later, but like little snack packs are always a good idea. Like if you're one of those people that has trouble with like open bags of things, I've had clients that they'll say like they just like, you know, get handfuls of almonds and that can really add up calorie wise.
Yeah.
So I'll just suggest like get those little 100 calorie pack almonds so that you're having like a single serving, or if you like have almond butter, those single serve almond butters are great. But just kind of like having like not like a big bag, because if you're not eating mindfully, you can kind of like get it to the bottom of that bag pretty fast. If you're distracted. Yeah.
It's like a barrier. Like the more barriers you have, the less instances you have to fall into like poor behaviors.
Yeah. Okay. So that brings us to the food police. We need to challenge the food police. And again, I'm going to kind of deep dive into this one. So when we talk about the food police, it can kind of be in your own head. So like how much of this should I be eating? How much should I weigh? When should I eat? You know, which foods are best for me? There's judgment, there's guilt. And sometimes these voices come from the media. Sometimes they come from family members, friends. And then sometimes it's just like your own personal knowledge. So one of the, in the book, one of the eating personalities, I think it's called the careful eater, which I kind of fall into this trap where I'm just like scrutinizing labels in the grocery store, trying to find which bag has the best macros, like, and just kind of, you know, like paying a little bit too much attention to things. Like if I go out to with friends, like I, you know, if I'm doing like a refeed meal, I kind of like scan the menu and try to like pick it out and like put it in my fitness pal to make sure it's perfect. But sometimes we don't need that stress. We need to just tell the food police like, okay, I need to just go out with my friends and enjoy it. And in the long run, that might actually make my cortisol a little bit lower. And the results a little bit faster. So do you have anything to add on food police?
Yeah, actually, that brings up a really good point I wanted to share about, like, connotations with certain foods. Like when you're asking your questions, like, oh, what should I be doing? How should I be doing it? And you're, like, really, I mean, I've been in those situations so many times where I'm literally, like, driving myself crazy in the grocery store trying to, like, find this gem in the desert of, like, what is the perfect macro-budgeted snack food? And that just adds more stress, like you said, and it's poor for your cortisol levels. And, you know, I've talked with a couple of clients who have certain connotations with certain types of food as well, too. When I tell them, like, you know, if I have a lifestyle client and I say, you know, I want you to go out and have like an untracked meal, you understand what is like how to create a meal. You understand what's healthy. And again, this is not a competitor, but somebody who, you know, just needs a little bit of that freedom. But there's still connotations with like, well, Mexican food is unhealthy, so I didn't have a really good refeed. I had blah, 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 blah. And I'm expecting when I hear somebody tell me, oh, I didn't do well with my weekend out, that they're telling me that they ate all of this like crazy food and overdid it. And really, they did a great job. And I have to, and sometimes in that case, their body responds even better. So I think, I think with the food police, it goes along with some of those connotations of like what food is good and what food is bad. I think within certain times in your prep, everything can fit. It's just a matter of knowing what makes your body feel good, and what doesn't, and making positive choices in that direction.
Yeah, and I think that that is a really great reflection, because you need to discover your satisfaction factor, which is number five. So you need to really enjoy what you're eating. I think there's a really big piece to that, that you shouldn't mm-hmm. be suffering through. Even when your macros are super low, you should be making it an experience, and it should taste good to you. You should be able to like season it and cook it the way that you want. Things don't have to be boring and bland just because you're on, I won't say a quote unquote diet or dieting phase. I'm going to say like you're prepping for a show. You're trying to get lean. It doesn't mean that you can't have what you want every day. And I'm going to share a story about Sohee Lee. I'm sure a lot of you know who she is. She used to co-host with Lane Norton on a podcast, my very first podcast that I listened to. And I remember her road to pro. She wanted to do an experiment on herself where she's very short. So she weighs like 90 pounds or something like that. She's sub 100 pounds. So just sheer body size limits, you know, her amount of calories that she's going to have just to like to get lean. So she wanted to prove that she could eat a Snickers bar every single day of prep and turn pro. She did this, but she felt absolutely miserable because she used almost her entire budget of food on the Snickers bar, and she didn't even want it. Like, she wanted like a big salad that would make her feel full, give her good energy. She made it through the prep, but it was like a miserable experience for her. And she was just trying to prove like that clean eating isn't like, you know, that you can do flexible dieting and be more successful. And at the end of the experiment, she was like, you know what? She's like, I wasn't really honoring like what I even wanted at that point. And it was just like, you know, elevating my blood sugar and like not letting me feel satisfied. And, yeah. So kind of like evaluate, you know, what you're eating. I mean, maybe it's something you enjoy, but maybe it's not giving you great energy and it's not allowing you to recover, or it's giving you poor sleep. Things like that, you know, you kind of got to listen to your body, and make sure that it's fueling you to make you feel good.
That's great. Yeah.
Okay. So I think we kind of covered principle six, feel your fullness.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree? Okay. So that's one of those.
Yeah.
And then number seven is cope with your emotions with kindness. So there are a lot of, I know for a fact, like myself included, that it's very easy to drive eating off of emotions. So we're not even just saying like, I'm sad, so I'm going to eat because I'm depressed, or I'm going to eat because like I'm mad or sad. You know, some people eat like when they're happy. Some people eat to deal with grief. So we're just like this bullet point, I think, is just, it's trying to recognize that your emotionals, eating, you need to be able to find comfort and nurture and a way to resolve your issues without food. So oftentimes it's like anxiety, loneliness, boredom, all these things can trigger food as that dopamine response. So it can kind of like put a Band-Aid on whatever feeling you're feeling. So if you're feeling pain, like it may numb you for a brief moment, but in the long run, you're going to feel worse. So I know you had something to kind of add on this. That's kind of like a different take.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it's really common for people to associate like eating out of sadness. Like that's always the typical thing you see on TV, the girl who gets broken up with and she's sitting on the couch crying and eating ice cream. So that is a behavior, but I'm very much the opposite. If I'm very sad or very depressed or dealing with something that is like a grieving type of situation, my appetite actually decreases significantly. And so I have to remind myself that I need to eat, because when I fuel my body or if I feed my body, I'll feel better. It just won't add insult to injury with like blood sugars dipping. So that is like a conscious effort. And I know like for a lot of people, like if they enter a new relationship and they're on this like really big high of feeling really happy, that's when they feel like they just eat whatever, whenever, and there's really no specific guidelines because you're just happy. So it's like, it's almost like you're celebrating every day. You're celebrating this new relationship or this new promotion or something that you're really excited about. And I think it's just a good thing to kind of recognize if you have certain and like you brought up before, Amy, too, like if someone is going to a birthday party, you feel like, well, it's someone's birthday, so we have to eat birthday cake. But those aren't necessarily true things, or they don't have to be specific rules. So yeah, paying attention to how you react with your emotions and your food relationships, you can kind of like cue in on how you respond and then make choices from there.
Yeah. And then number 8 is respect your body. And some key takeaways here is just stop comparing yourself with other people. I often hear competitors saying, oh, well, this person's so much further along than me. And like, you have no idea what their journey is. Like, you don't know if they started this 10 years ago and like where they were at your point in the journey. You don't know if it's like something on social media that's just like photoshopped or like has a crazy filter or some crazy angle. It's important to appreciate your body for what it does for you and making sure that you're wearing like comfortable clothes that you feel confident in that season. So like not wearing something that's too tight that makes you feel uncomfortable, mm-hmm. Or not wearing something that's super loose, you know, honor your body in that way. And, if you still are at a point where you feel like you've been, you know, trying to like follow this nutrition plan and it's a cut or, you know, you're prepping for a show and things aren't working, you know, ultimately I think it's good to get like your body, you know, screened for different things like PCOS or hypothyroidism, you know, get blood work. If you know that something's not right, in this process and you're kind of doing all the right things, you know, those are some things that you can kind of take a look at as well.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. And remember, people are going to hide their flaws on social media. No one's going to really put it out there for you to see. And our bodies, we see everything, all the good, all the bad. We see the three-dimensional. So it's natural, maybe not natural, but we're going to compare a perfect image with, you know, our bodies that we're aware of what's like maybe not ideal about them. So no one's perfect. And I think focusing more on celebrating your uniqueness and things that you have going for you is a better way to kind of honor your body.
Yeah, absolutely. I think movement, feel the difference. Number 9, the key takeaway there with this one is just that you're enjoying the movement that you're doing. For most prep lifers, we don't really have to be motivated to do exercise necessarily, like some other populations. But, you know, some of us do, like, especially like when it comes to cardio, like maybe you just skip it because you're not feeling motivated. Try doing mm-hmm. something different that you actually enjoy. Like if you enjoy being in nature, then incorporate that. Or like if you enjoy being with your family, you know, do something like an activity that's active that you can still get like similar results, but you're incorporating it with something that you enjoy. So you're not like isolating yourself in like the dungeon, like doing, you know, treadmill steps for hours, like around no one. I mean, that's not fun looking at the wall for 2 hours by yourself. So yeah. That's what I would say there. Anything to add on movement, feel the difference?
No, I think that's great.
Okay. And then the last one is honor your health and gentle nutrition. So the bullets on gentle nutrition that I just like to go over is just make a list of the foods that you love. Notice how you feel after different foods. Try a new recipe every week. Eat colorfully. Use a smaller plate. Keep binge foods out of the house. Keep a nutrition log. And then a big one, I think, is just, especially if you're macro tracking, like, you need to plan a menu ahead of time and be prepared. And then know that your kitchen is closed at a certain time, and do that by closing the kitchen, by doing the dishes, making it super clean. So that way, when you have your last meal, you know that the kitchen's so spotless that you do not want to go back in there and make it a mess. I think that can kind of mentally put closure. And then a clean kitchen always reduces anxiety. So any thoughts on that last one?
No, I think those are all great and very applicable.
Okay, awesome. Well, I know we're over time here, but I felt like we definitely needed to get through all 10 of these. If you haven't read the book, it's a good read. It's I think it's been updated 3 times, Intuitive Eating. And then they also have a workbook that they made in 2017. And I've always wanted to get that just because I think it has some good reflections and good journaling and mindful eating practices that I would really like to try. So although I've read through the book a couple of times, I think that's probably my next step. So I will put, once again, in the show notes, the name of the authors so that if you are interested in taking a look at that, you can do some deep diving of your own if you're a bikini nerd like us. So if you are interested in joining the team, you can go to glamgirlbikini.com, hit the get started button, and apply for the team. From there, we will be glad to schedule a phone consultation and see if it's the right fit. And if you would like to DM us or share this episode in your story on Instagram, you can find us at Prep Life Podcast or at Glam Girl Bikini. And we always appreciate any sort of reviews and ratings. It just helps other people find the podcast. So if there's somebody that you feel like would get value from this episode, please pay it forward. We are an unfunded podcast, so any kind of ratings or reviews just helps other people. It moves us up in the search list so that they can find us. So with that, this is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Anger, with my fabulous co-host.
And this is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro. Thanks for listening, guys.